devolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Professor Jeffrey Sachs, the director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. He is also a special advisor to United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Previously, he was a director of the UN Millennium Project and special advisor to United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan on the Millennium Development Goals. He's the author of many books, including the New York Times bestsellers Commonwealth, Economics for a Crowded Planet, The End of Poverty, and his latest just out is The Price of Civilization, Reawakening American Virtue and Prosperity. Welcome to Background Briefing.
Thank you so much.
And Tuesday night's Republican presidential primary debate essentially repudiated everything in your book. I mean, it was absolutely down to the letter. Most of the preoccupation with the candidates was bashing the federal government, blaming the government for the Wall Street crash and exonerating Wall Street. And of course, recently, the front runner, Mitt Romney, speaking at the Citadel, said the first thing he would do would be to restore defense cuts and give more money to the Pentagon. And as you point out, we have to rethink that along with, we can go through your list of recommendations. But it is a pretty shocking contrast to what you're writing, I have to say.
I think that the modern Republican Party would wreck this country. The way that it is propounding greed, selfishness, and irresponsibility. So I find it amazing. I have not too many kind words to say about the Democrats. I have to say this book is not a partisan book. It's a book that describes why America's in a very deep crisis and why that crisis will continue and intensify unless we change direction. And what the Republicans are doing is not changing direction. They are continuing Reaganomics since the early 1980s, which has been now 30 years of creating massive inequality of wealth and power in this country. The gains have all gone to the top. The middle class is sinking. The number of people in poverty is rising. And the idea that they want, which is to dismantle government except for the military, cut taxes, and engage us in yet more wars, is simply the biggest danger that one can imagine here. Unfortunately, President Obama has not been decisive or clear or a long-term strategist in how to get out of this. So my book is no apology for the administration. But what is happening on the right is absolutely frightening.
Jeffrey Sachs, you say in your new book, The Price of Civilization, Reawakening American Virtue and Prosperity, that essentially the big oil owns the Republicans while Wall Street owns the Democrats. Of course, just this last week at a big forum organized by the Atlantic and the Aspen Institute in Washington, Tim Geithner bemoaned and lamented the fact that now Wall Street wasn't giving Obama any money. So you're going to have to revise that a little.
Well, Obama's still trying to get money from them rather than calling them out for what they did. And Bill Clinton was the new Democrat that brought Wall Street and the Democratic Party together. And basically, he was the one that made this alliance of the modern Democrats with Wall Street. He led the deregulation process at the end of the 1990s that ended up in catastrophe. President Obama really, in effect, tried to continue that with the White House that had all too many Wall Street representatives in it from the start. If Wall Street breaks with him, I think it would be the most liberating thing for the president to finally get his feet on the ground with the real challenge that this country faces, which is to get this corporate lobbying and these powerful sectors, starting with finance, the military-industrial complex, big oil, under control. Because this is what has been driving this country into the ditch, and it's very, very serious. It's completely out of control. And the Supreme Court, of course, unlocked the Pandora's box for much worse to come by mindlessly declaring that corporate money was the same as free speech. And if you can't tell the difference between corporate money and free speech, you're not going to be able to keep a democracy.
So, Jeffrey Sachs, are you suggesting that the president should join the 99% that are down there on the streets of Wall Street?
Well, if he joined the 99%, he'd get a lot more of popular support, that's for sure.
One would think so. Why do you think the Democrats dropped the ball? I don't want to get into the politics so much because I talked to you about your notion about where they went wrong with the shovel-ready stimulus and which you describe as a crude form of Keynesianism. But just one last thing on the politics. Why do you think they didn't run with the outrage on Wall Street, which was paradoxically captured by the Tea Party, who are a sort of ersatz, you know, astroturf movement largely funded by plutocrats?
They didn't because Larry Summers and Tim Geithner and many others in the administration came from Wall Street. And the idea of the early Obama years was actually, in effect, to be nice to Wall Street. They had helped to fund his election. He brought in a Wall Street crowd. He was trying to be very moderate. These Wall Street CEOs that had wrecked the world economy were invited to state dinners. They met repeatedly in the White House with senior officials and with the president. It was all too chummy. But that is the party that Bill Clinton created. That's what the modern Democratic Party became. And I think it lost its bearings. Now, everything I say about the Democrats multiply about what the Republicans stand for right now because, unfortunately, the Democrats are a bit lost and wandering, and they have some remorse about it. The Republicans are not lost. They're funded by billionaire oil interests, starting with the Koch brothers. They are backed by relentless propaganda of the Murdoch Empire. And what they're really calling for is a dismantling of the core of our government, of education, spending, of science and technology. It's
and environmental protection, I would think.
Well, environmental protection is absolutely right in their bullseye. They're pummeling the EPA. Of course, look at Koch. He's got the largest privately owned oil industry in the country. He's at the center of global climate change. And what's the Republican remedy for global climate change? It is to deny it. Absolutely anti-scientific, remorseless in its propaganda, and it's an incredible danger. It's hard to believe that this modern society of ours, so technologically advanced, so much scientific knowledge has fallen into this political abyss. But this is money speaking, and it's immoral money, and it's money at the top that doesn't have scruples right now, and it's very dangerous.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by Jeffrey Sachs, the author of the new book, The Price of Civilization, Reawakening America's Virtue and Prosperity. Let's then turn to the book in the sense that there's you have quite a menu here of solutions, and we've talked about much of what is bedeviling us. We're at a peculiar time where economic realities are completely out of step with political possibilities, and we are sort of marooned in this netherworld between corrupt politics and dire economic statistics, if you will. But at the heart of it, we just touched on the environment. If global capitalism doesn't change, the Earth is doomed. And your colleague at Columbia, Jim Hansen, was talking about the pipeline from the tar sands of Alberta to Texas, saying if that comes to fruition, it'll be game over for the environment. So we can see the inexorable forces on the other side. How do you galvanize the forces to fight back and to recapture the planet? And it's going to require enormous imagination, not just in terms of fighting back to protect the environment, but essentially coming up with new ideas to employ people. Technology is clearly taking jobs away. I mean, there's a tremendous imagination deficit here. I mean, particularly when you think about the one chance that this government of Obama's had to deal with the catastrophe. They called it shovel-ready, what you refer to as crude Keynesianism. We need somebody to make that jump to the 21st century that Al Gore used to talk about.
When the administration came in, it adopted this grab bag of measures in a few weeks, which they called the stimulus package. And it was from both an economic and a political point of view, a wrong approach. Economically, it was a short-term burst of spending and tax cuts for a long-term problem. You can't solve a problem like climate change or energy systems or job skills in 1 or 2 years, but that's what the stimulus pretended to do. At the same time, it was politically, I think, very ill-advised because President Obama held in his hands at that moment the support of the country. He could have charted a new direction, but it would have required several months of leadership, of putting forward ideas and plans to the American people, not a few weeks of a hodgepodge package. And rather than doing that, the whole method of this administration has been backroom negotiations to satisfy the lobbies to try to squeeze some legislation through rather than direct dialogue with the American people, who are grown-ups after all, and are looking for the well-being of their country. I take energy policy as an example. Of course, we accomplished zero in energy policy. Accomplishing something in energy policy in this country is tough because you're going up against oil and coal. And those are the most powerful lobbies in this country. I would put them ahead of healthcare. I'd put them ahead of Wall Street. I'd put them ahead of even the military-industrial complex. Big oil is big bucks. It elects presidents. It breaks presidencies. If you're going to take on climate change, you better be aware of what you're taking on, and you better have a campaign that educates the public for many, many months intensively about how our lives depend on getting to an answer. That's not at all what they did, and I know what they did. What they did was they went down a congressional list and thought about what kind of things they could give to this congressman, this senator, what kind of side payments, in essence, with special legislation, a regulation here, something about nuclear here, something about offshore royalties here, something about emission standards here. So. And it added up to nothing, because the American people were never brought into this. And this is why this administration, unfortunately, the one that I so much want to function effectively, because everything on the other side is going to drive this country much worse, isn't functioning, because it is a lobby-driven, political advisor-driven process. The president isn't leading.
Well, you can sort of see the fingerprints of Rahm Emanuel there and the idea of let's make a deal.
Absolutely.
In a pork barrel-driven environment of boondoggles. But ironically, they gave Jeb Hensarling a whole bunch of money and he never even voted for the stimulus. I mean, they got taken on top of all of that.
Exactly.
But tell me, though, is it possible? Because this is the problem that Obama has, I think, and Ron Suskind's book I don't think helps a lot. If Mitt Romney, who looks is obviously the one that the Republican establishment want, provided that he can get past the Christian right, which is by no means a sure thing, his mantra will be, I'm the CEO. I'll be the CEO of America. I'll get things done. I'm effective. This other guy, it just is not up to the job. And the extent to which he's been taken, the extent to which he's tried to play by their rules and not, as you're suggesting, invent new rules, is taking him down. Do you think he has the ability to reinvent himself?
I think he's running out of time, and I think Romney would be a formidable opponent on exactly the grounds that you say. People are wondering, why is it that we'll be 4 years into an administration without any clear strategy and with a lot of improvisation? I think people will be quite upset. It is still the case today that Obama certainly can win, but he's not going to win on the past record. He's only going to win on being far more consequent and clear about the future. And this, ironically, he's been bad at. He's been bad at it in the sense that his speeches are filled with vision, but they're disconnected from policy. And it's been that paradoxical way from the start. He talks about all the right things. That's why I was an avid supporter. But then when it comes to how to pay for them, which actually involves taxing rich people, taxing corporations, raising revenues, that's where he backs down because the political advisors tell him, don't go that way. You have to fund your reelection campaign. You can't fight the lobbies. You can't take on these interests. Roosevelt took on those interests. He knew them. He came from that class. He knew how limited they were. He knew he could beat them by appealing to the common person. I think for Obama, this is probably also psychologically harder, if I could. I don't mean to psychologize, but I think what Roosevelt did is the model, but Obama isn't following it.
Well, you know that Obama has got to avoid anything that goes down that path of coming across as the angry black man, which is what Fox News would jump on. I think that explains a lot of his moderation. I mean, Van Jones came to his defense last week at a forum in Washington by saying, look, the campaign was yes, we can, not yes, he can. The we is missing. And of course, obviously, you're arguing he's got to inspire us. He's got to ask us to join in this movement. But does it come down to, though, unrealistic expectations? Is the system so rigged that not even a president can fix it?
The system is rigged, and rare times come when you have a chance of leadership making a breakthrough. 2009 was such a moment because a newly elected president with strong majorities in both houses of Congress, a massive economic crisis, and a country hungry for leadership who viewed George Bush as one of the biggest disasters in political history in America, made it possible for a new direction. It's exactly the opposite of what happened, of what Rahm Emanuel said should happen. He said a crisis is a terrible thing to waste, and they wasted it. They wasted it in the sense of going for gimmicks and backroom negotiations and deal making rather than speaking with and to the people. And Van Jones, of course, is right to say it is we, but the president never reached out. He never explained any of the policies clearly. Everything was in the back room. I'm an expert in healthcare. You couldn't figure out from anything that was said what was really going on because it was all a blur. The real issues were in the back room. I'm an expert on energy policy. These are areas that the Earth Institute specializes in. I know there's been no planning. There's been no strategizing except for congressional liaison. This is the problem. There is no way, and I've made this point in the White House explicitly, which is that this country is filled with talent from sea to sea. We have universities with great scholars, practitioners, engineers. We have a depth of talent unmatched in any other country in the world, and yet he's mobilized none of it. How to design a low-carbon energy system? How do we get out of this climate change trap? What are the real options that we have? How can we compete again with China effectively in the manufacturing sector? We have a depth of talent in this country. It's absolutely unbelievable. And absolutely not mobilized.
So, Jeffrey Sachs, two of the kind of critical nubs, if you will, of the issue here are, one, that the biosphere cannot endure unbridled capitalism. The quarterly growth imperative is totally unsustainable. That's one problem. And the other problem seems to be that we know that the only beneficiaries of productivity since the 1970s, when wages have been flat since then, the only beneficiaries of productivity now are capital. Labor is not benefiting productivity. We know that jobs is going to be the mantra of 2012. Do you think that we're going to have a realistic discussion about we need creative ways to reemploy people and not just this shovel-ready mentality?
I think I would just make one footnote to your observation, and that is it's capital, but physical as well as human capital, because high skills still pay off in this country. And in fact, many businesses are trying to hire people with high skills. I know Columbia University is trying to find very talented programmers, and they're hard to come by. They're making good incomes right now, and many people are and many firms are trying to recruit foreign workers to come in on temporary visas for this work. So I would say investing in skills as well as investing in infrastructure and rebuilding the base of our economy is crucial for the long term. The problem is that somebody has to pay for it, and the ones that have to pay for it are the ones that have the bucks right now. That's at the top. That's the hard nut that has to be cracked here, that's where the 99% come in. When all is said and done, there are more people in votes than there are billionaires, and it would be shocking if the billionaires win this battle. They win the battle because they control media, they control the messaging, they have the loudest voices, they print the newspapers, and so on. But there are actually a lot more people whose lives are at stake, and I think what is changing in our society now and changing around the world is the social networking and the free media. The point that we can now mobilize and reach more people doesn't have to be $1 billion to pay for advertising. That, I think, will be the turning point.
I thank you so much for joining us here in the studio, Jeffrey Sachs, again, the director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. He's also a special advisor to United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the author of a new book, The Price of Civilization, Reawakening American Virtue and Prosperity. And Jeffrey Sachs will be speaking tonight at the Los Angeles World Affairs Council. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about California's cruel prison system.
Get your oars back.